The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
We've heard so many stories in recent weeks about families fleeing from countries like Honduras and trying to make it to the US border. But between all the headlines, it can be difficult to get a true picture of why someone might flee a country like Honduras and what it is about the US that is so appealing to so many. While new film Colossus is told through the eyes of a 15-year-old boy, Jamil Sunsin, the only person in his family born in the US. And when he was around 10 years of age, his family were deported back to Honduras. He now lives without them. He's around 15 at this point in New Jersey.
The only thing is what I want is always have my family. Always. I was giving my heart, I was giving my sweater, you know, to America. I was living the best to them. I did everything to this country and they kicked me out like that.
And no parents should go through that to even think how I'm gonna live my kids here.
Oh, life was great, man. Life was great.
I didn't have, like, no worries. I was just, like, a kid.
Where did this guy go? Where did my dad go? He just disappeared. 2 weeks, the presidential election.
I want to get on to having a strong border because I want to get on to things that are very important to me and that are very important to the country.
I'm just upset that I can't just like wake up one day and be like, hi mom, how are you doing? Like my sister, I'm like, America, can you help me do something? Can you give me advice? I've been pretty depressed because I worry about everybody.
And director of Colossus is Jonathan Sheinberg, and he joins us this evening from New York. How did you come across Jamil, first of all, Jonathan?
Well, the process was kind of in-depth. We spent about a year to a year and a half just researching different stories. At that time, there was a huge issue with unaccompanied minors coming up across the border around 2015, late 2014. And so we were initially looking to that kind of story. But then, you know, the larger story of even the unaccompanied minors is the story of families being separated or families that are kind of torn apart by these different issues of violence and surrounding immigration. And so we did a lot of research and we basically were posting on all kinds of message boards that we knew that a lot of these immigrant organizations read and different people that would know these types of stories. And then Jamil's cousin, who's his guardian, eventually got wind of it and reached out to our field producer, Natasha. And she basically said, I think I have a story that you'd like to hear about family separation that surrounds immigration issues in the U.S. And we heard her story after hearing many stories and saw some video of Jamil and knew that this was the right story.
Hmm. He was born in the US. When did he discover his family were undocumented? Did he know through his childhood?
He didn't. He knew that. Well, he knew he was born in the U.S. I mean, but his sister did not. His sister thought she was born in the U.S., but she was unaware that she was actually born in Honduras. She was carried over the border by his parents, by Jamil's parents, when she was about 11 months old. And they never told her, Mirka is the sister's name, they never told her that she was an American because they didn't want her to feel different. And so they sort of protected that information from her. And then she obviously learned about this eventually when both of her parents, Jamil's parents, got deported, you know, or got deportation orders. Eventually they had to tell her. But Jamil was born there and always knew that he was American, but he didn't know that his parents didn't have American citizenship.
Huh. So, and I said at the start, you know, a lot of the times we've seen so much of this coverage over the last few weeks and few months, and a lot of the times you don't exactly know why they're leaving and why they want to be in the US. Why do they leave Honduras in the first place?
You know, Honduras is a country that's been racked by a lot of corruption and violence for many years. And there's a lot of people who live in poverty and lack of opportunity as a result of the situation there. So it's usually a combination of both. I think in their particular situation at the time, it was probably more driven by the lack of opportunity and the situation of poverty they were facing. The country had started to get violent, but it wasn't as violent as it is now. you know, so it was, they were definitely driven by the lack of opportunity and wanting a better life for themselves and their children. And in terms of the very, you know, difficult situation in Honduras with the corruption and the political unrest that the country has faced in the last decade, that really drove them to make their way to the U.S. And you know, and then when they got back, by the time they got back, it was when the country, Honduras, had become quite violent. And, you know, a year later, I think it was, it became the, you know, the most violent country in the world in terms of homicide rates for non-conflict countries.
It is a mantle, I guess, that we associate a lot of the time, all right, with Honduras. Young Jamil himself, I said he was around 9 or 10 when the family were deported. So when they were first deported, I guess it was found out that they did not have the papers, or was there anything else involved in the reason that they were deported at the time? This would have been under the Obama administration, I guess.
That's correct. What a lot of people don't remember, you know, in the reality and in all fairness, Obama in his first 4 years was considered by many, especially immigration organizations, to be pretty bad on the immigration issue. There was a lot of anger because he turned out a huge amount of voters from the Latino community here in this country. And people felt betrayed. They felt that he, in an effort to look tough because he was being accused by, you know, many Republicans that he was weak on security and other issues, that he decided to be tough on immigration. And you know, there were a lot of people that were deported and families separated in his first few years. He tried to make up for that with DACA, the deferred action policy, and then, you know, really changed his tune in his second part of his administration with the attempted amnesty bill for the undocumented immigrants. But the reality is that they didn't have documentation. They came in here undocumented, both of his parents, and they went into the court process trying to get some type of status, and they were told pretty much, you know, as they came near the end of the process, that they weren't going to have any options. And so, like many immigrants, they decided to disappear into the shadows and try to just make a life here. And they were here for 10 years, you know, living. Never, you know, had any criminal record. Alex, the father, worked very hard, you know, and built a life for himself and his family. And unfortunately, you know, he got picked up one day on his way to work. And then that was, you know, what led to the deportation.
So Jamil, first of all, he was only at that age anyway, 9 or 10. So he went with them. And what was it like for him, this 10-year-old kid growing up? He had grown up in New Jersey then, had he? New Jersey was where they had settled.
Yes.
And then to suddenly go back to Honduras. What was that culture shock like for him?
I mean, for both him and for his sister, it was really hard. I mean, these kids are essentially Americans. They grew up in, you know, a place that they weren't a wealthy family by any stretch. But, you know, obviously there's drastic differences between Honduras and America, just in terms of the whole society and systems. And language, obviously, was a big barrier for them as well.
Because does he speak Spanish? They
could speak a little bit of Spanish because obviously their parents spoke Spanish to them, but their Spanish was really rough and they didn't speak it well. So a lot of the kids made fun of them, and, you know, they walked into a situation that was, I mean, drastically different in terms of the poverty levels, the crime levels, just the general infrastructure and feel of the country, and you know, their general level of danger in terms of their everyday life. Just, you know, commuting back and forth to school became a real concern. So they literally had their lives turned upside down. They were, you know, whisked away from an existence that was pretty, you know, safe and sound and normal childhood experience for, you know, many people, to a place that was quite unfamiliar, quite dangerous, and in which they didn't understand the language or the culture really at all.
Jamil came back on his own. Why?
He was traumatized. You know, the way it was, he described it to me, and the way his family describes it is he had, you know, there were a couple attacks that occurred, a couple incidents, and one particular one in which they were held up at knife point, and the guy apparently, you know, as he described it, like tried to stab them, and then their father came out with a gun, and you know, he was trying to rob them, and you know, it was a very terrifying experience for him. You know, I mean, he's 11 or 12 years old, I think, at that point, and it, you know, a couple of things like this happened, and he just didn't, he would refuse to leave the house. He was so afraid of society and just the way life was in Honduras, and you know, his whole personality changed, as it was described to me by his father, that he went from being this happy-go-lucky kid to this very withdrawn, quiet person that was suffering from trauma, from his fear of living there and not being able to go back to what he felt was his home, which is New Jersey in the U.S.
And how do they feel about sending him back, essentially, you know, sending him back on his own, back to this country?
I mean, he, you know, it was a very, very difficult decision for the family, but the feeling was he has this opportunity to be in a safe place with a good education, with, you know, all the opportunities that he didn't have in Honduras in many regards. And you know, the reality for him was that it was a very difficult choice to leave his family and very difficult for them, but they feared for his safety there. They feared for his future. And they decided that this would be the best together. He and his family decided that this would be the best thing, as hard as it would be, because, you know, why would you risk all the dangerous and sort of issues surrounding, you know, his mental health that had arisen when you're afforded this other opportunity, which would really potentially be a benefit for him.
Who does he have in America?
His cousin is his main guardian, his older cousin. She's, you know, about, I think, it's, you know, 15 to 20 years. She's in her mid-30s, and she agreed to take him in. He also has an aunt there, you know, in the U.S., and somebody who's also close to the family. So he has kind of extended family, another cousin that sort of took him in and agreed to, you know, shelter him and kind of watch over him, you know, since it was the only one in his family that could be there.
And it must be so difficult while they're making this decision for Jamil and for his future and for his safety and his security and his mental health, to see his sister, who's only a couple of years older, not being able to do any of those things.
Yeah, in a sense, I mean, Jamil is the main character of the story, but I think the real tragic story is really Mirka's story. Her story is really quite heartbreaking, in the sense that here's a 13-year-old girl who all she knew was America her entire life. I mean, pretty much was spent there, and she was, you know, is all, for all intents and purposes, an American teenager, you know, and she was whisked away and, you know, deported back to this unfamiliar, unsafe place. And she lives with that every day. You know, even now she's commuting back and forth. She just started college, and she tells me how fearful she is when she has to come home on the bus at night. She worries, you know, tremendously for her safety and well-being. And, you know, had she stayed, if she would have stayed with Jamil, even though she didn't have status in 2012 when the Obama administration passed DACA, she would have been a DACA recipient. And that's what's really hard for a lot of them, and you know, one of the big tragedies of their story.
Well, it screened and premiered at the New York Documentary Film Festival. So have they seen it? Have they seen the film?
Yes. So, we premiered just last night and at Doc NYC, and they had seen it. I had shown it to the family. I had shown it to Jamil before, and then we sent a link so that Mirka and Alex and Allison, Jamil's parents, could watch it as well. And you know, for all of them, it was very emotional. But, you know, fortunately, I was relieved that they all felt that it did their story justice, and that I was respectful in terms of trying to capture many angles and issues surrounding what they go through and what a family, the aftermath of a family that's been separated, in terms of the intimate issues that they deal with. You know, they were happy with it. So that was a huge relief.
And how optimistic are they now, Jonathan, that they might get back to the U.S.?
I think there's a lot of mixed emotions. I think that obviously, given the political situation here and our current administration, there's not a lot of hope. I think that they hold out hope that maybe in 2020 elections will change things and change their prospects, in terms of, you know, if a Democrat that had a different position on immigration were to be elected, and the Congress here in the U.S., which at least for now seems to be shifting in that direction towards a Democratic Congress, potentially there could be some change on immigration policy, because it seems to be the, you know, the elephant in the room that everybody is, you know, Obama dealt with healthcare when he had a Democratic majority. So unfortunately, immigration never got dealt with. But people, I think, are thinking that immigration is the next big issue, that if the Democrats can gain control, will be dealt with.
Yeah, well, certainly President Trump made it his issue to gain support and gain votes. So, as you said, it'll be interesting to see what would happen if the Democrats were in power and did have the ability to make changes in Congress as well. I should ask you, by the way, the title of the film, Colossus, explain it to us.
Yes, it's not obvious. So Colossus comes from the poem on the bottom of the Statue of Liberty that is called The New Colossus. Mm-hmm. And it is the famous poem that was written about the immigrants that came to America during the early 1900s that came to Ellis Island. And the famous stanza, "Give me your tired, your poor," is the one that people are very familiar with, I think. It's a sonnet, not a poem. I always make that mistake. People call me out for it that are, very particular about that. So I should say The New Colossus is a sonnet.
Well, yes. The film is called Colossus. As you said, it just premiered at the New York Documentary Film Festival. After this, what's the hopes for the film?
So we'd like to take it to other film festivals. We're definitely hoping to take it internationally and around the world, and just to really get it as much exposure. Obviously, we'd like to get working on distribution so we can take it for its theatrical release, and then the goal would be to obviously sell it to somewhere where it can be seen worldwide, and across this country and worldwide, and really to just be able to share the story as far and wide as possible, because I think what's special about the film, I think that's what's unique, and what the feedback we've been getting to people that have seen it is that it really helps to humanize the aftermath of family separation, due to our current immigration policies in this country, which is so painful for so many people. I mean, you're talking, we have a stat in the film that roughly 700,000 children have been separated from one or both of their biological parents in the last decade. And that's only growing, obviously. And, it's essentially, it could be a huge mental health crisis, in the future in this country.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the film is called Colossus. Jonathan, great to talk to you. Jonathan Scheinberg is the director of it. Good to talk to you this evening, Jonathan, and thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. News Talk 106 to 108.